Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James. Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black, gay.
And lady mm-hmm. like.
Ooh, lady like. She likes it. She likes it a lot. She likes it. She likes it a lot. She likes it a lot.
Lady like.
She likes it.
This week on Minority Corner.
Ooh, what are you talking about, James?
I feel like I got really dramatic just now. Did you feel that?
It felt like, kind of like a Shondaland show. You're very,
you
like,
know, well, just channeling in my Shondalining, as the kids say.
Shondaning.
The Shondaning. So, not talking about Shonda Rhimes, but knowing us, probably will at some point.
We probably will. I mean, we already did.
It should. Yeah, it's true. It should be a drinking game. Every time we talk about Shonda Rhimes, take a drink.
Then everybody would be goddamn drunk.
Within the first 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of, this reminds me of, you taught me the best drinking game ever.
Oh, what was that?
In college. Uh-oh. When you're watching The Labyrinth,
oh,
you take
yes.
a shot every time you see David Bowie's crotch. You're wasted 25 minutes into the movie. Wasted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was, college Neke was like, what's the fast way to get drunk?
That, yeah, that was you.
David Bowie's penis.
David Bowie's penis, fastest way. R.I.P. So, I'm actually talking about not just drinking to David Bowie's crotch, but I'm going to be talking about the do you know about the Brasietto program?
No, I don't, but it sounds...
Good thing I'm getting ready to learn, laugh, and play.
I am.
I'm going to talk about the Brasietto program. And this is the thing, you know, people... It's mainly going to be talking about the history of immigration from a certain part of the world into the U.S. It's a two-part series.
Oh.
This week, I'm going to be talking about Latino immigration, and next week, I'll be talking about Asian immigration.
Whoa! We are getting fucking PBS News Hour up in this bitch.
Stepping it up.
I know!
Episode 79, we don't play.
And you know what? I am joining you in PBS Corner because this week I am talking about boss ladies. I am looking at a Pew report and we are talking about women in leadership.
That is amazing because I wrote in the show notes that you would be talking about and you didn't look at the show notes, but I wrote and I was going to be talking about how to be a boss ass bitch.
Literally almost was going to say boss ass bitch. That's how much we are Wonder Twins. We are a hive ass mind.
Didn't even know what you were going to be talking about, but I was like, I bet Aneka is going to be talking about how to be a boss ass bitch. And lo and behold,
am I lazy ass to even look at the notes? Oh.
You don't have to. I got you.
We got it. We're in each other's heads.
How to be a big boss ass bitch and look cute doing it. So I imagine you'll also let us know how to do that too.
Well, we always be looking cute. You know, everybody got their own styles.
There it is. Mission accomplished already. So let's get into it.
Let's go.
Cutie. She's
okay,
got
James.
The power. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She do.
I got questions for you.
I've got answers. I've got
because
many an answer. Yes. What?
I have gotten so many text messages from you being like, I am doing this right now. I got this coming up right now. I am busy on the go. And my boring ass has just been sitting at home crocheting this blanket. So...
I liked it because they would just like hit you with like little nuggets and wouldn't go into more details because I wanted to get your live reaction on air.
I know! It's like our friendship is on the air.
I can't, like, Aneke, save it for the cameras. I think it's similar it's similar to, like, I think Gabrielle Union's character and I think Chris Rock's top five.
Oh, yeah, she's top like, five.
Yeah, she's, like, filming. She's, like, a desperate house. Not a desperate housewife, but, like, you know,
just
like
a real housewife.
And anytime they try to have a real moment, she's like, baby, save it for the cameras.
See, we are exactly like that. It's like we're reality stars.
So this weekend all started off with a friend of mine was throwing his own rich birthday party. He has one of those apartments that when you get up onto like, I'm like, oh, I don't know what room number it is. It doesn't matter because when the elevator opens, it's all of his apartment, right?
How do you meet these people?
It's New York.
My whole family lives in New York and I don't know anybody.
They don't have one of those. They just go up in the
no,
they don't know.
They live in Okay. They live in nice houses in Long Island and stuff, yeah. But, you know.
Well, it was his...
No apartment.
It was his birthday, and then so we watched, okay. You know, it's all 25 of us, and we watched RuPaul's Drag Race, and then off to the bowling alley we go. And then him and his... He's like, I'm going to pay for bowling for everybody. So he pays for bowling for everybody.
What?
And then he's like, I'm going to play for a laser tag for everybody, and pays for a laser tag. But the key thing is...
I like how this is the part that I'm not supposed to be surprised about.
Oh, I'm just glossing over these little things. This isn't even the big part yet. So we're there at the bowling alley, and then who's bowling right next door to us? Fucking Brooke Shields. Brooke Shields.
Yeah, I knew this.
Is bowling right next to us.
Which is crazy. What type of bowling alley were you at? Because I think of bowling alleys and I think of just like regular folk like me.
Oh, I mean, it was like a New York style, like Chelsea Piers. Like it had like neon lights and like, you know, hip hop, like all the like hip hop. It was like being at a club because they put a wristband on us before we went in. It was like we were in the club, like bowling in the club. So there's Brooke Shields. She looked a little like... She had a long day. She was like shopping with her daughter.
So she was tired.
She was done. She was rolling her eyes a lot as she was signing her check.
She was rolling
Brooke was
her
done.
Eyes.
Brooke was done with the day. So
I
Brooke
love
Shields.
This.
So that was like highlight number one of like the weekend, right? And then this one's actually gonna tie into my corner, but I was hanging out with a friend of mine named Brian Benson, aka drag queen Cousin Wonderlet, aka big kind of producer guy. I think you've seen him before or seen him perform.
I've heard of Cousin Wonderlet.
Yeah. Well, Cousin Wonderlet, you have, because I think we talked about him on the show. He was the assistant director for La Mission with Benjamin Bratt. He also was the assistant director. Yeah. He was also the assistant director for Diary of a Teenage Girl, which we had. We had Anthony Williams, who was in it. He was on it. And Diary of a Teenage Girl also features Kirsten Wiig. Alexander Skarsgård and Cousin Wonderlet was the reason why Alexander Skarsgård got dressed up in drag. So there's like these legendary photos of Alexander Skarsgård in drag.
Right. I remember it now. It's all making sense. We literally were just talking about Anthony Williams.
We were just talking about Anthony Williams.
We were just talking about him.
Because he did a good job plugging our show when he was on it. He was a good guest.
He was an amazing guest. Go listen to that show.
Go listen to that again. and then he also assistant directed Howl with James Franco. So, like, I really love the movies that...
Shit, he's in the mix.
He's in the mix. Very much if it's, like, a really San Francisco movie that has, like, a lot of heart and authenticity to San Francisco, like, he's involved in it, right? And so he also recently did this documentary. It took 4 years to do about Dolores Huerta. Mm. And I got an interview with him, but I can't screen the interview until the documentary is going to screen later on in the year. So in August, you guys will get to hear that interview. He showed me some clips of the documentary.
So cool.
It's fucking...
Yeah.
I only saw like 5 minutes of it. I was already in tears.
Oh, wow.
This woman is so amazing. And like, you're going to be just dumbfounded that you don't know as much about her as you possibly should. And she's still alive, still doing amazing shit.
I went to see her speak.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we'll do like a Dolores Huerta special come August.
Oh, she's amazing.
She's great. So, but we're sitting down and like, because it's Dolores Huerta, like he's been in contact with all these different celebrities who, these are actor activists like Jane Fonda, who he's been emailing with Jane Fonda about like they're going to do... Just casual. But what's so funny is I got caught up in it, Aneke. I got caught up in it. Because he's referencing Jane Fonda as just like Jane. He's just like, oh, well, you know, like...
Stop it.
Well, Jane was emailing me about this, and I was saying to Jane, and I got caught up into it, too. I was like, well, you know, Jane would be really down for something like that. You know, You know, Jane, she'd be a big fan, because, you know, she's an activist.
Oh, my God. I can't even handle the casualness of it.
And as that was happening, this guy, I don't know if you know him, but he was on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. His name is Danny Strong. We're having brunch. He goes walking by into the restaurant that we're having brunch at. And I'm just like, oh.
Yes, I've heard of Danny Strong. Yeah.
So he goes walking by. So there's Danny Strong. So that's my first 2 days, Friday, Saturday.
This is craziness.
Now let's get to the main event, fucking Sunday. Fucking Sunday.
Okay, so we had the warm-ups. Now here we are.
So I injured what I didn't tell you. My back has been in pain because, you know, when you turn 30, your back is like, fuck you sometimes. So
basically, your body starts to slowly rot until you die.
Which is what Aneke told me on my 25th birthday.
Because that's when you stop producing cells, everybody. If you're older than 25, you're dying.
And do you know, I've told that to every person who, every time they turn 25, I pass it along. Like, my big sister has told me this awfulness, and I ruin people's lives, too. So, and it sticks with you.
It's fun. You'll never I mean, there's a reason why you're telling other people, because it's fun to say this shit.
It's literally like the ring. It's like the birthday present. Aneke has delivered the birthday present of the ring to everyone. And now all of our listeners will continue to tell this story to everyone. And now everyone's just going to think that their bodies are dying, because they're over the age
but
of 25.
But check this out. Yeah. I don't know any, like, well, I do know a 24-year-old. I know a couple of people under 25.
You work at a university, so you, is it your birthday?
Up.
Is it your birthday, Shalice? Oh, you're 25. Well, you're dying 7 days. You are Samara from the ring. Okay, so I'm on Sunday, I'm like, day of rest. My body is, I played way too hard at bowling and laser tags, trying to impress Brooke Shields with my strikes.
Hanging out with famous, awesome movers and shakers of New York.
As you do. And then I'm on my back, and you all might remember this guest. I'm on my back just, like, hanging out, watching, like, what was I watching? Sense8 or something. And I'm like, this is what I'm doing for the day. And I get a text message from Ashton Nicole Black, who she was on our show.
Full Frontal.
She's one of the writer's correspondents for Full Frontal. She's like, what are you doing today? I have an extra ticket for this fundraiser. Would you like to go? And yes. And I was like, all right, let's go, old man back. Like, time to fucking rally this shit up.
You need to buck it up. Buck that shit up. Put on a brace. Hobble yourself to that gala. I don't care.
Thank you, Mama Dina Lohan. Like, you need to go. Get your panties on and go to this gala. This event that was also, like, I looked on the front page. She's like, this is the event. First thing I see is, like, it's hosted by Cicely Strong from SNL. And it's hosted by her and Martha Plimpton. Do you know Martha Plimpton?
That's for our Gen X crew who used to watch MTV. I was a little too young for that, but I'm sure a lot of people who are older than me know about her, right?
Yeah, she's like rock star. Because, like, she is a bowl full of energy, like a boat full of energy, a universe full of energy. Like, she is a lot of woman.
Wow.
And it was weird because, like, Cicely Strong was hosting it, but really Martha Plimpton was really hosting. Like, she, like,
wait. Am I right or am I wrong? No, Martha Plimpton is an actress. She's not from MTV.
Well, she was also in The Goonies, and she was also...
Yeah, reverse.
Yeah, she was in The Goonies. She's also recently, she was on Raising Hope. She played the mom in Raising Hope and the mom on The Real O'Neals right now. I think she might have been on MTV. Well, the event...
Sorry.
Yeah, tweet in at her. Tweet in at her. Get the answers. You know, we got
The answers from
keep
her.
Us on the straight and narrow, y'all. So, the show, the event was called Broadway Acts for Women, and it was a charity event for A is For... dot, dot, dot. And A is For, if you don't know what A is For is a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing reproductive rights and ending the stigma against abortion care. So that was...
Ooh, I love this. Yeah, this is great.
Big fundraiser for that. And as I'm sitting there, and this is a small... It's at 54 Below. 54 Below is below where the original Studio 54 was, right?
So they were like, not in the same space. Let's go under it.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I am breathing in the fumes of, like, people who've OD'd, like, celebrities who've OD'd and died. Like, I am just that. Yeah. It was probably,
cocaine's past.
Yes. It was probably, like, the, like, sex love dungeon for all the people who were, like, you know, the real it crowd was going down here.
Okay. All right.
So that's where I am for this, you know, event, raising up money for awareness about abortion and just, you know, raising up money for that. Hosted by Cicely Strong was there. So it was weird because I was just watching on SNL that day. And so it's a very small space. It's like maybe 150 people there tops. And it's like, it's sort of set up like the Golden Globes. It's like a dinner. It's like a dinner as well. So it's sort of like set up with like, and it's all like in a U shape, right? And so I'm sitting sort of like at like, you know, a tail end of one of the U, of like one of the corners of the U's toward the tail end. And then who is like sitting at like dead center, who is in like, she is like, I would say 10 o'clock view of me. And because it's all U-shaped, I can look at her reactions for the entire show. And I
Who is it?
Deborah Messing. So.
Oh, what?
So there's Deborah Messing. She's wearing these like glasses, these kind of like old lady glasses, which are really in right now. And
she loves a big glass.
She loves a big glass. And it's also an auction. And like Deborah, I'm also like, who, at first I'm like, who is this woman who's like racking it up for all these different like trips and auctions and stuff? Because we're raising up money. Mm-hmm. And what would happen is some Broadway star would then sing some, you get, it's like karaoke with these like big Broadway stars who were there. And then you would get to like pick which song they would sing and raise all this money and da da da.
Oh my God, I would just pick Cats for like all the...
Well, no, they would actually sing...
Jellicle Cats.
No, they would. It would be like this, I forget this guy's name, but he's like this Broadway Tony Obie Ward winning guy, like in his 50s. And we got...
Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Yes, no, it wasn't him, but some other British guy. And they had him sing Baby One More Time with like this like live band. He killed it. That song has never been awesome. So sexy. I went up to him afterwards and I was like, you need to record that song. And he was like, thanks, mate. So at the end of the show, so like within the first 3 minutes of the show, I whisper over to Ashley, I'm just like, this is fucking amazing. Because the band is amazing. The energy is great. Yeah. There's like celebrities here. And
how is the food?
The food was expensive and great.
Oh, wow.
And then who's sitting in the booth right next to Deborah Messing?
Who?
Rizzo from Grease, Stalker Channing. And
Stalker Channing.
Yeah,
this is so random. Ashley says the most random group of people.
And Ashley says to me, because like it's so fun hanging out with Ashley, because like people would give her that double look because they can recognize her, but they're like, did we go to high school together? And I'm just like,
she's on the verge of fame.
I'm like, no, she's on Full Frontal. And like this room, this is her audience, right? Because these are people who are like here to raise money about abortion. They watch Full Frontal. They know Ashley, and so it was so great to hang out with Ashley and just kind of ride her to coattails of like fame and be right next to her. And then people kept looking at me like as if I was famous, but I was like famous by just for proxy. And they're just like,
you just should have been like, not yet.
Maybe soon. I can tell people are like looking like, maybe I know him from something. And it's just like,
I wish you had some Minority Corner pamphlets.
I thought about bringing some Minority Corner postcards. Thought about
just
it.
Just put them on the table. Just put them on the table.
That would have been a great idea. Damn it, Dina Lohan. I should have let you know what's happening. So then the show is wrapping up. It's amazing. And it's also great to watch all the people that have like a shit ton of money just like bidding on this shit. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah, that's crazy.
One day, can't wait to just be like, oh, I'll match. I don't want any of the prizes, but I'll match what they just bid for $5,000. Like,
you just because you got a ton of money and you like to help. Yes. Goals.
Right? Hashtag life goals. So then at the end of it, Ashley's like, I'm famous enough to go meet Deborah Messing. So I just hold on to those coattails and we walk on over. And on our way to go meet Deborah Messing, we stop by and say hello to Stalker Channing. Like, fangirl with her.
Oh my God. You shake guys, hands with her, meet her.
And then we go over to Deborah Messing's table and wedge our way in there before, like, she's trying to leave, right? But like Ashley is boss. She's like, nope, I'm gonna go meet her. And two people like leave from talking to Deborah Messing, and then Ashley like talks to Deborah, and that was like, I kind of overheard a little bit of the conversation. I just kind of stood there and smiled a lot and tried to include myself in the circle of conversation.
Start laughing, not a lot, and smile.
I wedged my way in there and just sort of stood by, and I think, you know, Ashley was like, oh, I'm on Full Frontal, and you've been a huge inspiration for me being on TV. And then Deborah is a fan of Full Frontal and was like waking out. And then she kept looking over at me because it was like, are you famous for a proxy too?
You should have been like, well, I'm on Minority Corner. Haven't you heard?
Well, it didn't matter because what Deborah did is she then reached her hand across and introduced herself to me and was like, hi, I'm Deborah. She said, hi, I'm Deborah. And then she says,
like, you're like, I don't know who you are.
She goes, hi, I'm Deborah. And then she goes, and this is my son. And she introduces me to her, like, her son who's standing right there.
Who's your
and, like,
son? Some kid? Or was he an
kid.
Adult?
Some kid. But he was like a kid that was like, he was very professional. He was like maybe 8 years old, but like he had this like professional.
He's like used to this. He was born into this.
Yeah. So that was the night of just like,
what? It just That's crazy. So, what did you say back to her?
You know what? This was my first time not saying anything stupid and ridiculous to a celebrity. So
I'm glad you weren't like, I'm sorry, Will and Grace got canceled.
That's my usual thing, right? Or like to say to Stalker Channing, hey, sorry that Grease didn't make it into a series. Sorry you weren't invited for the sequel.
Will and Grace is coming back. You could have had a point to talk about.
I could. She was on her way out, but I just said I forget. I think I kept it very casual. You know, just introduced myself to her. We kept it very casual. I just didn't say anything stupid. And
you didn't go like where are you guys going?
can I come hang out? Oh, here's my headshot and resume for Will and Grace. Should have some more people of color on their show because it's in New York.
Oh, hello. They are going to be filming a new season, so they need to hire some more black people.
Yeah, because I live here in New York, and guess what there are?
Black people.
Yeah, they are. There's a lot of us here, and Latinos and Asians. Let's see them on TV. So that was,
No, that was great. I was just going to say that I saw a trailer for Blade Runner, and there's, like, no people of color in that. And I'm like, apparently in 2040, we're all dead, and it's only...
You know what? It's so funny that you bring that up, because I also saw that trailer, and I guess I'm so used to not seeing people of color in things that, you know what, Aneke, didn't even register to me. Is that how, like...
I know, isn't that...
That's how brainwashed we are.
That
I didn't even think twice about it. And it's weird, because I should have, because it's, like, especially, like, sci-fi. But I'm so used to us not being in those that I'm just, like, whatever. But if it's something that is set in New York or something in the place where it's set in the real world and there's no diversity, I will be front lines, fuck this mess.
Yeah. It's true. I agree.
Yeah.
Fuck, James. You had a fucking weekend with a capital W.
With a capital W, I did. So that happened.
Wow. Yeah. I drank a lot of wine. Okay. I crocheted.
Look at you. Okay. Did you finish?
No.
Okay. Well, hashtag life goals.
So I'm glad that you took over this front part of the conversation because it was amazing.
Yay. Want to take you on that magical ride of just like every day it just kept was like, what is my life? What is going on?
I just say
yes, yes, yes. Thank you, universe.
That's just exactly what you got to keep doing.
Yeah. Well, shall we kick it over to the corner?
Yeah, I'm ready to hear about your corner and immigration and all the interesting things that come along with PBS NewsHour corner.
Yeah, get ready. It's PBS time, bitches, which is what they, I think that's exactly their catchphrase. It's PBS. It's PBS bitches.
We might get sued.
Oh, because we stole their catchphrase. Okay.
Yeah.
It's PBS witches. See, there we go.
There we go.
And we're back, brought to you by the letter I for immigration. So, Nick is like, oh, I did not know that. Okay.
Because I was like, where are we going with this?
Yeah. So, because I was meeting with my friend, Brian Benson, the one who did the documentary about Dolores Huerta, it got me thinking that I remember when I was in college, I had done this research about immigration. And it was very, I felt like it was very connected to what Dolores Huerta and the work that she did. And so I feel like leading up to, we're going to really hype up this interview with Brian Benson because it's not till August. So we're gonna,
I know, it's months away, but hold on tight, y'all. It's coming.
Remember how long we stretched out hyping up the Ashley Black interview?
Paid off, though. We did it. People liked it.
We only get so many guests so many times a year, so...
We got to pump them up.
But I want to make sure that when that episode hits, you're feeling very knowledgeable about that world that we're talking about.
You're
and then
ready.
It's just like general like history of like, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, make America great again. But what does that mean? And who was involved in that, you know, picture? And there's a special program that really shaped and changed the way that we, our relationship with immigrants, specifically from Mexico and Central and South America, but specifically from Mexico. And then there's other things that, like, America's had a lot of different programs that have both built bridges for certain groups of people to be here and also throughout for the longest time, different rules and laws that have blocked specific people from different countries specifically, right?
So right, like, this is really fucked up, like what they're trying to do with the Muslim ban.
Exactly, and it's not like this is a new card that this country has played, like we've done it before, so it's important.
It's an old-ass dusty card.
They're like, just blow this one off, and yeah, we can be racist to this country based on X, Y, and Z. Awesome.
Oh, so bad.
So the Brasileira program is what we're going to talk about today. And I'm only 5% Spanish according to Duolingo. So this might not be correct in my pronunciation of this.
Duolingo?
It's an app? Duolingo is an app where you can learn different languages for whatever it is that you want.
Oh.
French, Spanish,
so you only have 5% of Spanish learned? I thought you meant you were 5% Spanish as in your heritage.
Oh, no, like I'm 5% fluent in Spanish.
Ooh, that's okay.
Stop it. Okay, wow. Hey, gotta start somewhere, Aneke.
You gotta give yourself some credit. You are from California. We at least know some words.
And I took 3 years of high school Spanish, so I feel like...
So there you go. Give yourself some credit. At least bump yourself up to a 10%.
But I can't do it. No, the program tells you what your percentage is. I am literally 5%.
That was a
I thought you were mama judging my 5%.
No, I feel like being from California and having taken Spanish in high school, you would have absorbed something.
You know, those verbs are very complicated.
It's true.
They're very confusing for me. Or like, but I understand like maybe our
conjugating is hard. Conjugating is very hard.
Verbs are hard. Like language is hard for me in any language. Let's be honest. Y'all have heard me speak for 79 episodes. So like, I mean, I do the best that I can. Anyways.
We're all trying our hardest.
Trying my best. I get that award that says, he tried his best.
We get a gold sticker. That's the theme of the show.
Which there is an award. There's a ribbon for I tried my best that Hallmark used to sell, which is like, that is just... I tried my best.
I don't want that. I would rather be like, get out of here. Give me
just
nothing.
Don't give me nothing. I tried my best.
I'd rather have nothing than I tried my best. That sounds like I did a shit ass job.
You did, but we're giving you this ribbon because you get a participation award. So the Braciero program, Braciero is the Spanish word for manual labor or one who works using his arms.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. So we literally have a program that is like named after that, right? So mm-hmm. World War II changed the world, right?
Yeah.
You know, afterwards, you know, America became a superpower. We then had bases all over the world. It's when we started to become our own empire. You can reference, right. I talked about this before, the Oliver Stone's documentary on Netflix, The Untold History of the U.S., 10-part yes. Series. Highly recommend it. It misses, it's not perfect because it misses out on programs like this. And also through World War II, women and African Americans entered the industry in large numbers to help address with all the different shortages that were happening. So along with workers from Puerto Rico and Mexico underneath the Braciero program. And even if we back up before then, there's a history of the U.S. Getting workers from Mexico or from through things like, you know, annexation. So, like, you know, the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which ended the Mexican-American War, and the U.S. annexed part of northern, you know, Mexico. So at that point, about 50,000 Mexicans living in that region became American residents, which you've referenced before, too, with your Texas
Ranger. Yeah, during the Texas Ranger.
Absolutely. So this is all kind of like, you know, this is a spinoff from that. Happening, right?
History connecting.
Like, really, yeah. Because, again, this is stuff that, like, when do you learn about this stuff, right?
Yeah, you don't hear this shit at all, ever.
So when that happened, they started, like, in the 1900s, the U.S. Began to recruit impoverished rural workers from the western central Mexican states and areas. So they started recruiting, and after World War One, recruiting got even more intense because America loves cheap and free labor. We love cheap labor, right?
Especially yes.
Just love it. So, but then what happened about 1924, there was an immigration law that restricted entry. It started to get a little bit more restrictive. So it's been this constant sort of push and pull of like, ooh, we need you to come work here for nothing. And then like, no, but get out of
our country.
But it's like this, like, yeah, but it's like this, it's like publicly saying, get out of here. But then like secretly being like, oh yeah, come over here and work. I need, like, you know,
yeah.
It's like,
yep. Clean my shit, but I hate you.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, what happened was during the Great Depression, the government like was like, fuck all of you. And they deported about like 453,000 Mexicans to reduce the unemployment pressure. After before that, they were like trying to get everybody to come over here and work. And then they were like, get out of here. Hard to live.
What the fuck? It's like we're constantly in a replay of this shit.
Well, that's why it's like, and that's why you and I are big key, like, you know, flag wearers, pamphlet wavers for history.
Yes.
Put it in a pamphlet and get the word out.
Because we're sick of repeating this shit.
Yeah. And maybe that's really what it is. We, you know, grassroots efforts. Maybe we need to produce some pamphlets, you know, because people like this information is out there. But maybe if it's in pamphlet form, people will read it, like Abraham
Lincoln. More attractive to people. Apparently,
people love pamphlets. So in August 4th of 1942, the United States signed the Mexican Farm Labor Agreement with Mexico, which essentially is what the Bracero program was. So farmers, because again, farmers were like, because around in the 1942, a lot of people were going off to war. So a lot of labor was being shifted and changed. And, you know, farmers are like, the cheaper the labor, the better. And yeah, so the U.S. worked this.
Asses.
Yeah. So the U.S. worked this deal with Mexico, primarily for them to work in areas of agriculture. But some did work in other industries as well, such as factories and railroads. Specifically, it was all about young male workers to come over here. And they would work for about 6 months, but they could then renew their visas with their employers. Sometimes women would also cross the border with their children with relative ease. Like, it was just like, all right, I'm going to go see my husband. He works over there. And just like, oh, okay. Like, it was not too strict in terms of, like, at the border. So women
so people are passing back and forth.
Yeah, and that's actually literally, like, for the longest time. Because especially, like, once, part of Mexico became part of America, like, people would, like, go visit their families, like, back and forth with, like, no problem and no issue. Because, you know.
That sounds beautiful because it's all land
that doesn't belong to any of these folks anyways, like Mexican or American, like,
right. It's just land.
Well, I mean, it was First Nations people that were here and then, you know,
exactly. And then everybody decided to come and like stake their claim.
Well, and by everybody, Europeans, but we digress. Yeah. We digress. So from 1943 to 1945, about over 100,000 contracts were signed to recruit Mexicans to come work here in the U.S., right? So this is, again, this is a legalized contract between the U.S. and Mexico. Mm-hmm. So by 1945, the Bracero population had grew exponentially in Philadelphia because a lot of folks would go up to a lot of Mexicans were working on the railroads, and so specifically like in the Pennsylvania railroads. So
interesting. Essentially, like, I didn't know that.
Yeah, these folks were working like all over to help, essentially, you know, building what this nation actually is, right?
Yeah, the infrastructure.
Yes, absolutely, and to keep it like sustained, right?
Right.
And so this agreement was supposed to be about, like, in this agreement, you were supposed to be guaranteed decent living conditions, adequate shelter and food, sanitation. You had a minimum wage of 30 cents an hour, which I guess at that time was, you know, I don't know. But I assume.
I mean, they had penny candy back then, so, you know.
I mean, you could
but
literally.
I don't know then.
I think you could go on, like, a cruise vacation for 5 cents back then. Like, I think so. I think that was the game. So, all right.
It probably wasn't the best.
I think the idea. I imagine though, because this was a deal
it
struck
wasn't
with the
30
government.
Cents now,
yeah, it's not 30 cents now. But because it was a deal struck with the government, I'm thinking it was like an adequate. Like, you know, they're not going to go run off and go be millionaires, but, you know,
no,
well, not with that much money. So, so they were generally paid very low, but they were, you know, paid general low wages for work that people in the U.S. were not willing to do it. They didn't want to do it. Right. They weren't going to do it. And so, like I said, part of the agreement was they were supposed to get adequate food and lodging and shelter. And in Philadelphia, they lived in what was called boxcar camps. Right? Do you see where this is going? You can see where this is going already. As you can tell, the conditions were horrific. They were shitty. Just terrible fucking conditions. They were essentially treated like dogs. They were living in these small cabins. Food quality was really bad. Like, what they were promised was not what they were given. And most of these people were being separated from their families to come here and work and, like, send money back home. Their pay would be docked for, like, weird, bullshitty type, like,
what?
Not unionized things, but, like, under the guise that they had a union. They were completely taken advantage of. They had little contact with the general population, limited access to healthcare, recreation, translators, legal aid. Like, what kind of life is that?
That sounds like servitude. Like, it sounds...
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there were different, like, organizations that did... especially in Philadelphia, there was an organization, I forget the name of it, but did mount up and was in support of these workers and did manage to get them like somewhat better treatment. Like they were able to like
give
them like these huge sort of like, you know, cultural fiestas and parties and things to somewhat give them like a feeling of like being back at home. Okay. Somewhat. So some movements and labor movements started to happen. Yes. But brasieros were treated so poorly in Texas that for a period of time, the Mexican government refused to send any workers to that state.
That's when you know it's fucking bad.
Yeah.
It's your government, like you have a protest against like what Texas, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And you know that Texas is the first state now where the government just like a couple days ago, the governor was like, we aren't funding, we're eliminating sanctuary cities.
Not surprised. And you know, it's so crazy because it's like Texas of all places, especially like, I mean, was super much a part of Mexico, you know, like,
yeah,
you were very much a part of Mexico. Yeah. And so it's bananas because that land, again, we have, you know, early, you know, hipsters come in or who are the people that take over people's land? Who is it?
Oh, gentrifiers.
Yes. Early gentrifiers, which sometimes are hipsters.
And they were dicks. Like, that's what the whole flag is with the cannon that was like, come and get it.
Yeah.
Where they like literally white settlers came into Mexico, which was Mexico at the time. They were like, they took the Mexican army's cannon and then made flags that said, come and get it. And then that's how it became Texas.
Wow. And see, like, it's bullshit like that. Like, when you hear about, again, like, you know, these Latino workers, like, who built this country? It was not white European people. Maybe, like, white Irish. Maybe some, like, white Italians or something. But, like, this land.
And they weren't considered white at the time. They just happened to be assimilated in because they look white.
Yeah.
The rest of us don't look white, so we don't get that.
And I'll talk about this next week, but there's even, like, specific, like, Southern European countries that were you were banned to come into this country from. So it was a very specific type of person that was allowed to come in here into this country. But yet, like, they still needed everybody else to then build this. So when I hear Ann Coulter say that her people, like, built this country.
No, you didn't.
And we say, well, who are those people? And she's like, I'm from the settlers. I'm a settler. Like, go fuck yourself.
Right. Settlers didn't fucking, they just settled. They showed up and then they hired people and then they banned them from the country.
Yeah, it's so weird. Sold their land, then was like, get the fuck out of here. And then was like, wait, come back. I need you to live. And I need you to build things for me, and I need you to make it so my country can run. And then, oh, wait, no, get the fuck out of here again. But wait, come back, come back. Come back at midnight. That's okay. Come back. Shh, our little secret. Get the fuck out of here. That's literally America. Like this.
That's the American story right there.
That is
you just did
in a nutshell.
It's a one-man play.
I got to do a one-man show called America, and that is literally what it's going to be.
That is all you're going to do for 20,000 years. No.
Yeah, that's it. And so many workers, so a lot of folks were also like a lot of the biggest places. So they wouldn't, a lot of these Latino Mexican workers wouldn't only go to rural areas. They'd also go to big urban cities because that's where a lot of the different war efforts were being consolidated there with like factories and all the building of all the war machinery that we needed. So that's what they would also get there, which I always think is fascinating, too, because No lie. Like when I go to a certain city, sometimes I'm like, okay, how is there such a huge Mexican population in this city that's so far up north? And now I know, you know?
Yeah. Like New Jersey, there's a huge Mexican population in New Jersey. Like in the New Brunswick area. And that's probably because of that.
The railroads, right? They were out there to work in the railroads, right? Mm-hmm. So, other little highlights too about, you know, in World War II, so, you know, Mexican Americans were also, a little sidebar, drafted and volunteered into the U.S. Armed Services at very high percentages. And in fact, they had some of the highest percentages of Congressional Medals of Honors.
Wow.
Yeah. Over than any other minority in the U.S. But I also remember, I forget, but I talked about blacks involved in World War II. There was a lot of political stuff about blacks being able to be involved in the war. I talked about it on a few episodes back.
Yeah, I recall.
But I don't remember all the details about it, so we'll have to jog that memory there.
Listen up, everybody.
The reason why I'm mentioning this, though, is because it's like, when you look at all these fucking World War II movies,
there's no goddamn diversity. Because they also had us segregated in our own, like, regiments, too, which is so fucked up.
Yep, or they would, like, put us at the fucking, like, front line to essentially act as, like, a human shield and stuff. And so, again, like, I mean, there's this new, there's another new, what's that? Christopher Nolan has, like, a new World War II movie coming out or whatnot. Yeah,
Dunkirk, I think. Sure. But I think that that's based in British, though. Okay. I think those are...
But even in England, as we have proven, there were non-white
there were people
settlers.
Of color over there. Like, come on, filmmakers.
Do better. So, and just some other... So, So as the war was happening, you know, there's this really interesting quote. Like, a lot of... I mean, these Mexican-Americans were like, this is my land. Like, not even just migrant workers who came here to work, who worked mm-hmm. through the war effort and was here to help sustain this country so it could last and make it through that fucking war. And then you mm-hmm. even have these, like, you know, Mexican-Americans who, again... through the border crossing over them were here mm-hmm. and had been even slaughtered by Texas Rangers, which we talked about in past episodes. But there was this one guy who a Texas Mexican explained that after Pearl Harbor, he said, you know, I was born in Mexico myself too, but I raised my kids and I have to fight for my country with my kids.
Oh my God. See, yeah. like, and we're still shitting on people, like, what is going on? What is wrong with you, Americans?
And I want to say specifically Mexicans. I feel yes. like there has been such racial awfulness and bias that, like, along with blacks, you don't have an America without Mexicans.
Trump
and-
called Mexicans rapists. Yeah. And people in America elected him president. Like, mm-hmm. you should feel ashamed of yourself. I know you're not listening to this if you voted for Trump, but if you happen to be listening to this and you voted for Trump, go back, listen to what James said again about the people of Mexico and what they did for this fucking country. I just get so heated.
Well, and that's the thing is that, like, if we learn about our history, we would vote in a different way. Like, if we learned about who really built this country and all the involvement. And again, like, we have what has happened. And, like, oh, and I'll just wrap this up here, that the Brasileira program was intact until 1964. There was an agreement that extended the migrant labor agreement of 1951. So it acted as an amendment to the Agricultural Act of 1949. So from, what is that, 1942 to 1964, what you've done is mm-hmm. you've created a bridge and dependency for both countries to be dependent upon each other for work. So if you're just like, well, how are all these people just magically here? It didn't happen magically. It happened systematically. It happened through laws that this country created.
Right.
This dependency upon it. So during that time period, I think 5 million Mexicos came to the U.S. as brasileiros, and hundreds of thousands stayed. And others came, too, through other different ways as well, like if their, you know, families would come. And there was a path to citizenship. But these folks, like, fucking worked their ass off to be here. Or in some yes. already here, again, because the border switched over. And then they would sometimes, like, whenever someone was in charge, and again, looking for a scapegoat for economic problems or issues, like, the Border Patrol launched in 1954 Operation Wetback, which was a program that massively deported undocumented workers. And it's so cyclical, because you're hearing instances of this happening again. And it's just, like, the history of it is this country is nowhere without the people that actually built it. So the Mexicans, the people who came from Central America, South America, the black yes. folks, the slaves that were here, and I would even yes. Asian Americans as well, who fucking, you know, came over here from Asia and helped build the railroad.
Yes. It's like out of control. That's why I can't help but feel that anybody who is against immigration or wanting to crack down on immigration on a select group of people, it's fueled by racism. That's purely only what it has to be. It's racism, because everybody who's here is contributing in a certain way. And yeah, there are bad people in every single group, but it isn't just based in one country. No. That to say that one whole country is filled with bad people is racist. And we need to be explicit about that, because people don't like to be called racist.
Well, and I guess my question is then how do you get folks to see that? How do you get them to see that it's racist? Or how do you get them to see the truth of it? Is it in telling them, like, the history of how, like this, that these programs were enacted, and that's how, yes. You know, because I think that we can't, like, I want to continue waking other people up and getting that information out there. So how do we do that?
I think by you bringing attention to the basis of our country and how people from Mexico, just by talking about this one program and how people from Mexico were brought into this country, and there were work programs which were going back and forth, and we talk about these stories, and so they can get this nasty picture, this false, nasty picture of people leaking through our borders, sneaking through, stealing money from us, living off our whatever, which is false and untrue.
Yeah.
Then it will, if we tell positive and truthful stories of how it actually happened, which you just did, then it will start to counteract with that awful perception that is motivating this racism and xenophobia, which has been so invasive, and it's basically weaved into the American flag as xenophobia, and we need to take it out.
So hashtag historical facts.
Yes.
Hashtag historical facts. One sidebar before we go on to our next quarter, I did want to say that when I was doing research from this, and it was interesting to revisit this because I think I wrote a paper on this when I was like 21, with Maury Menjas. I got to do a dual paper with someone. Weird class. But it was, we both got to write a paper together.
Lazy teacher. That's like 50% of the
class. But you know, the class was journalism class. Okay. Anyways, so I don't know if it was like, because in journalism, you co-write articles together. The article I was reading was talking about how a lot of this then bridged through these programs, and obviously the horrific treatments of Mexican and migrant workers, the United Farm, like different groups and associations form, like the United Farm Workers. And what made me really mad was when I was reading this article that it credited Cesar Chavez with, you know, a lot of times Cesar Chavez, great man, but only his name gets mentioned about the work that has happened, and whose name is consistently left out?
Dolores Huerta's.
Exactly. And so that's why it brought me so back, because it's so funny, because I wanted to talk about this specifically because I was so inspired by talking with my friend Brian about the documentary and then watching the clip and then researching this. Her name is once again left out of history. So
thank you, James.
More to
come.
And
I love that we're continuing the conversation. Like, you guys who are listening and our listeners now, you can be motivated that we will be talking more about these topics into August when
there's so many angles and stuff to come at this. And there's so much information that, like, you know, we can't just do it in one episode. So
The story needs to continue. If people keep fucking having deja vu, then we need to keep reminding people about the true history of America.
This is true. Like Kesha said, that story's got to be told.
Let me write it on a napkin.
Here we go. Annie, get your gun. Put it down. Drop it with some knowledge. Your name's not Annie. It's Aneke.
My name is Aneke, and we're talking about ladies.
Annie was also, let's talk about it, boss ass bitch.
She was such a boss ass bitch. She was fucking doing all the rodeo, all the gunslinging. Doing her thing. So basically, I want to talk about women in power, but the thing that inspired me to talk about women in power was this episode on This American Life, episode 616. Please listen to it. It's amazing. It is all about pirates. And I have a love-hate relationship with pirates. It is kind of interesting to me. I don't really know how
talk to me about this, because I remember back in college, we were not allowed to do anything pirate thing because we went to UC Santa Cruz and like the super PC, like, I mean, very PC. And we went to Porter College, which was like super, like, you know, peace. Extra PC, like super...
Yeah, but nothing's wrong with that.
No, not at all, but super right. And so, like, we were not allowed to do pirates because anything pirate theme, not even space pirates, because pirates rape and pillage.
I mean, yeah, it's true. They were illiterate. They went to different, like, boats and would take their shit, and they would rape it all over the town. It was ridiculous, you know? Like, I don't even know how to, like, really understand why I like them.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so gross.
Yeah.
You know?
Profession of dicks.
Yeah, that's what it boils down to. But at the same time, you know, they stole from, like, rich people, from, like, big corporations and stuff.
Rich-ass people, yeah, really, yeah, you're right.
So,
yeah,
you know, so...
I can see that.
Well, anywho, This American Life, this one, episode 616, is broken into three different acts, and the first act is about this one asshole who goes on a midlife crisis, leaves his family to become a pirate. He, like, literally is, like, done and goes.
Yeah, and just, like, so bored with life that he's like, oh, I want to go be a pirate now.
Yeah, it's like, fuck you, dude. And then the second one is, it's about Somali pirates, which...
Not into it.
Is a little too real for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Not as fun and whimsical for Aneke. Aneke likes a little whimsy in her storytelling.
Exactly. I need a couple hundred years to make it more whimsical.
Some distance in time. A little distance. A little too close.
A little too real.
I saw that Tom Hanks movie and that shit was intense.
Fucking scary as shit. Yeah. I like a little, you know,
On the cruise ship, we used to have to, like, have conversations about, like, what happens. Yes, because it would happen. They would get up on the cruise ship sometimes.
On a
cruise ship, there's no guns. No one has any weapons there.
What do you mean you don't have any weapons? What?
Not even security.
What? Not even, like, a gun? Nobody has a gun?
No, there are no weapons on a cruise ship.
That's weird. That just doesn't seem right to me. Like, how do you protect yourself?
But I think, like, in some ways, like, I mean, okay, because... But no one's coming on board with any weapons.
You don't know who's coming on board with a weapon.
No, but they've been screened.
But what about the pirates? You know, coming on board.
Well, get that flare gun and pray.
I guess. I mean, a flare gun can can do some damage, you know? Well, anyways, so the story that I want to talk about is the last story. It's the third act. And it is about this woman pirate lady named Chen Ai Sao.
I'm intrigued.
Yes, she is really cool. So this lady pirate commanded a ship of over 300 junks manned by 20 to 40,000 pirates.
What?
I know. She had men, women, and children, little bitty babies, all aboard these ships that were all up in the ocean.
Fuck. She was like, children, get to fucking work. Get to pirating.
I know. Exactly. She had a huge-ass fleet. It was bigger than the Chinese Navy at the time. It was insane. She was boss-ass bitch.
Damn. So she, like, ruled. Who runs this world? Her.
Yeah. Madam Ching.
Yeah.
And can you believe she did all this shit when she was, like, 33 years old?
Damn, life goals. Aneke, we need to get on it.
Right?
Because we are behind.
Like...
Do you know, like, how did she get into the pirating world? Was she bored into it, or...?
No, okay, so she basically was in charge of this prostitute ship kind of thing. So, she was commanding that. She ran into this other pirate guy, and he convinced her to marry her. At first, he was like, marry me, and she was like, nah, I don't want to marry you, bitch. And finally, she was like, you know what, I think this might be a really good idea. So she took him up on it, and then after that, he died.
Oh, did he die, or was she just like...
You know what, you never know. He could have been murdered.
By her? You are insinuating some stuff, Aneke. You were trying to start a war
with the
most badass pirate witch in the world.
What? No, I'm not! This is just conjecture.
Okay.
You never know. It's lore.
I've seen one or two of those Pirate of the Caribbean movies, and I'll tell you this: they always come back.
She's not coming back like with octopus hair or something.
Yeah, so she's like, I heard what you said on your podcast, and I'm not having it.
Like she's listening to my podcast.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so Chen Ai Sao, or Madam Ching, she basically dominated the seas.
Okay.
And she was able to have ports all over the place where she had banking. She ran it like a corporation. Her fleet was so huge that she was able to deplete the Chinese Navy of their ships, where they had to actually go to England. And they were like, excuse me, England, can we have some ships? Because this lady pirate is out here stealing all of our ships, making us look bad, while she's taken over not only China, but also Britain and Portugal.
They were like, she took all of our ships.
Yeah, basically, because she was crazy. Like, and the best part about it is she did not let her pirates rape. She was like, no, don't you dare do that.
You know what? That was gonna be one of my questions I was gonna ask. Mm-hmm. I was gonna make a conjecture. Is that the word? Conjecture?
I think so, yeah.
I was going to conjecture that I bet she was like, y'all can be pirates, but no raping.
Yeah, she had no problem with killing, though, but definitely no raping. Punishable by death.
She's like, just don't rape them. She's like, just fucking kill her. Don't rape her.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure her experience on the prostitution ship had something to do with this, but check this out. Along with her not raping the female captors or having her pirates do that, she was also able to be one of the few pirates to actually retire. She just came into port and one day just retired.
Damn. When she was like, eventually she's a retired pirate.
Yeah, and she made negotiations with the Chinese government to get jobs for her crew, other pirates. She got them jobs with the Chinese Navy, which is insane. Yeah. And she also just kind of rested at home for the rest of the time.
See, this is like, I saw a really boring, unimpressive movie trailer for the next Pirates of the Caribbean. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
This was a missed opportunity to have this badass real life pirate woman up in the mix with her octopus pair and slicing and dicing.
I know, which is like so irritating to me. There's diversity back in the 1800s on the high sea, and we don't even get that in our movies.
She just would have looked like really like hardcore and just like cool, you know?
Yeah,
like,
definitely. Like,
could have been played by Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
Or what's that one woman? She was starring in Crouching Tiger, and then she was also in Rush Hour 2.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but I was also thinking like maybe like a Constance Wu. She's Jessica and Fresh Off the Boat. Do you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know who I'm talking about?
I guess I was wanting to get someone who could do the martial arts. I don't know her backstory, but you know.
Yeah, but does she have to do martial arts? Like, what is up with... Come on.
I'm just assuming.
Yeah.
But come on. No, if she... Oh, how dare... Oh, do not.
What?
Oh, come on. You don't think if they had this Chinese female pirate in a Disney Pirates of the Caribbean movie...
Okay.
What, you think she'd just be... walking?
Yeah, but I mean, we need to try something new. We need to break the mold, break the stereotype.
I'm okay with her doing, because visually, I love seeing some martial arts. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but I mean, neither one of us are Asian, that's so true. It's kind of like, where
but I think it'd be dope. I think it'd be dope to see a Chinese female pirate just fighting it up. She'd have to sword fight.
Oh, fuck yeah.
She's gonna kick, too.
Okay, why not? Like, you know, might as well go full-fledged. I mean, fuck it. Why don't we just have, like, a whole movie devoted just to lady pirates out there doing their thing on the high fucking sea, just yo-hoing it up, not raping anybody, just, like, living that life, stealing that money, you know? Getting all that cashola. I don't know. What do you think?
Badass pirate bitches, witches.
Yeah. So... speaking of badass bitches, let's go into our Pew report, Women in Power. So I decided to take my PBS corner and I went and did some research up on the Pew report, which is a really good site for good statistics. And they have a lot of different statistics on women in power. And I just thought that I would read some of these off to you. So the first one that I want to read is women in Senate. And right now we have 21% women in the
21%.
Senate. 21%. Yes. 21 women that are currently in the Senate. And in 1992, we were looking at about 2%. So there's been an increase. We're doing pretty good. So I can't really be that upset that we've gotten better than 1992. But at the same time, 21% is not a lot of women senators.
Which is insane. Can you imagine, Aneka, in our lifetime, that like, it just, and those poor, words out of my mouth, Aneka, because that's during when we were kids. There was just a bunch of literally like dudes and probably just straight. That's only recently has the demographics of this country changed in terms of our leadership.
I know. It's crazy. So moving on to the U.S. House. So our
that's
U.S.
crazy.
I know. Our U.S. House of Representatives, we're at about 19.1% of U.S. House of Representatives.
I mean, 54% of the American population is women.
Mm-hmm.
So it should look like that in our voices in leadership.
Right? Like, one would think that it would we just have room to grow. And a lot of these statistics that I'm going to be reading off today just mirror that we have a lot of space and places that we need to get to. So moving on to the U.S. Senate, we currently are at 19%. And in 1992, we were at 6.4%.
So that 1982 was 6.4%, and now it's at 19%?
Well, 1992 was when we were at 6.4%.
Even back then. But, like, could you think about that? Like, in the early 90s, that meant, like, in all of Congress, only, like, you know, a few, like 4% of the representatives were female.
I know.
And I can't even imagine being a woman then working in either House or the Senate, trying to get anything done.
I know. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
It'd be crazy. Okay, so moving on to state legislature. We are currently at 24.8% of state legislature are women. It's been pretty consistent. If we're looking at 1995, we were at 9%. It plateaued around 2000 and then it started rising up again. So, I mean, that's kind of good. Let's move into governors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so currently, let's see, let's move on. Let me ask you a quick question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So in 2004, we had 18% female governors.
What?
What do you think the percentage of female governors are today?
I'm going to say we went down just a tick, and it's just 17.5.
Yeah, like, no, we're at 8%.
Wait, Aneka, that's huge.
Yeah, I know, 8%.
That's really huge.
It's crazy.
That's big.
Yeah, we dropped a whole freaking 10 points or 10 percentages since 2004. Mm. It's ridiculous. This is why we need to see women in power. This is why we need women politicians.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead. What's up?
Because is it so much that we're not electing them or are women not running?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think there's nobody to elect and we need to get more people to run.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's an important question.
Right. It is incredibly important because it's something that we need more women in power to vote for.
Yeah.
You know? If we don't have anybody to elect or to encourage to elect, who are we going to elect?
We vote for them. Absolutely. I agree. And I think it's also scouting out who these women are who have potential to to run, you know.
Yes, so important to get these
women. And you see them and there are people who are leading some of these protests, some of the women who started Black Lives Matter, all of those. I mean, there's like three black women who started that.
Uh-huh.
All of them need to like run. Like who is, where are the folks to be able to, and especially like dudes in power looking out for those, that the female leadership to step aside and to make room and to make space and give access to.
My God, we need to encourage people to run. I think that's like one of the things that we always neglect to do is to encourage the young girls to run for office. It's so important.
You know who's really good? I'm sorry, you go.
No, it's okay. I
didn't
kind
want
of
to interrupt you. I'm sorry. I was rude of me.
Just kind of fading out.
Okay. I want to jump in and we'll, you know, this is a name we'll be hearing a lot this year.
Yeah.
But Dolores Huerta, she runs different organizations that help. I'm going to make Dolores Huerta a household name.
You damn sure are.
In that. But she has an organization that helps to champion Latinas to run for political office.
It is so important to get these women of color in the position of power. But shall we go into the U.S. cabinet? So women the percentage of women in the U.S. cabinet. Nope.
But you know what? It's time to open up that cabinet and see what's going on in there.
Yes, it is. So who had the most women in their cabinet, do you think?
George Bush.
No. No.
Oh, good.
It was Clinton. Clinton had 40.9% women in his U.S. cabinet.
Insert joke here.
Come on. At least he's employing them, you know?
Fair enough.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
So
fair enough.
You know, so currently Trump has 21.1% women in his
cabinet.
They're
there. You know, these numbers are all awful.
Yeah.
None of them, like, even when you're like, it went up a tick, it's still awful.
I know, right? What? It's nothing past 30% generally.
And, you know, Nick, I want to say, you know, and the words of Alanis Morissette.
Oh.
Thank you. Thank you, numbers.
These numbers don't lie.
These numbers don't lie, just like Shakira's hips. They don't. These numbers. I feel like, I now feel like you can put your own festival to unite women to run for office. Like, you can do a summer tour festival that's going to have Shakira.
Yeah.
It's going to have Alanis Morissette.
They're not doing anything. Not at all. You know.
I think she's on, Shakira's on break from The Voice or not invited back. I don't know. I don't know the story.
Oh, it wasn't there. She's not coming back because Miley Cyrus is on after Gwen Stefani. I don't know how I know this. I really don't.
Got the inside scoop.
I guess I do.
But it's similar to, like, when I watch the documentary 13th with Ava DuVernay about the prison industrial complex. It was information that I knew.
Yeah.
But when you see it all together.
Oh, I know.
It's alarming. You know, when you see all of these numbers together, all these percentages together in one place. Because you look at the pictures, you look at the class photos of Congress, and you see, like, okay, there's just a few women there, okay.
Yeah.
But you see it separately, and then you see the Senate one, you say, okay, there's just a few women there. Mm-hmm. But when you put all of these numbers together, it's like, oh, but damn.
Right? It's shocking. It's
we
like,
need to get to work.
Right. Yeah. We need to get some shit done, because clearly things are not stacking up to the way that they need to be. Oh. So just as important as politics, let's get into corporate stuff. So, you know, so, okay, let's looking at the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. How many do you think women are CEOs in Fortune 500 companies?
Oh, I think you're 4%.
Close, 5.4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Up a tick. Yeah. Up a tick. I guess I was reading last year's numbers. Yeah. So
you were close. You were very close. Still really sad. Still very shameful. And you know, I bet none of them are women of color. I mean, personally, I don't know that, though.
Well, I will say I work for a company where it's one of those. My company is a black female seat. I work part-time for TaskRabbit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a company in tech. And our CEO is a black woman.
I love it. So, coming from there, what do you think the percentage was of CEOs in 1995 for 500?
1%.
No, 0%.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
So in our lifetime, there were literally no women.
None.
Who were CEOs.
Yep.
Fortune 500.
It's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. The growth, at least we have some growth.
So I guess, like, if you're, like, watching a movie or a TV show back in the 90s and there's no powerful women.
Yeah. There's
the truth.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the Fortune 500 companies, they definitely had zero back then. So at least we have 5.4% now, which is insane, but at least we have
Which is why, and get ready to take a shot, I love watching Shonda Rhimes shows because you see women who are surgeons, you see women who are lawyers, you see them who are there in these high powerful positions.
It's so true.
And young women see these and they're like, I can do that. It's the same thing for, like, you know, as an actor, when I see other folks on TV that look like me, I can do that. You know, it's
inspiration.
Important to be able to see that.
Yes.
And you know what? If you don't see it, you can still do that.
Right. It's about believing that you can do something and encouraging those around us to go for something that they don't normally see, which is so important.
You might be the first, and you get to go be the first.
And, you know, nothing wrong with being the first of all. So moving ahead, let's do one last statistic to something that we all, not all of us, but those of us who do go to college, respect the college presidents. You know, that is like the highest of that type of leadership around that type of environment. And the percentage for college presidents are 26.4% in 2011 for female college presidents.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good. I mean, considering the other statistics, it's still under 30%, which is crazy that we can't seem to break that magical 30 number. And back in 1990, we were looking at about 19%. So it isn't really increasing that much. And this is a position that we look to the president who comes out and gives commencement speeches and talks to the students at the beginning of every year and makes sure that everybody is, you know, it's highest education. It's who we look towards. And, you know,
absolutely.
It's ridiculous. Well,
and it's also important for that leadership in general for, I think, what it does. Because I think, honestly, circling back to the one of the original HBICs.
Okay.
Is, what was the pirate name?
Chang I Sao.
Madam Chang.
Yeah.
And, you know, has she had this policy of, like, no raping, right?
Right.
She was still doing all the other stuff. And I think it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes a difference having a female leadership. And I've said this before. I think we're coming out of society's ebb and flow.
Right.
And as I was watching, there's this documentary called The Pyramid Code. It's on Netflix.
Oh.
I highly recommend it. And
oh,
it talks
okay.
about how we are coming to, there was a point in ancient Egypt, because
mm-hmm.
again, they existed for like 3,000 years.
Hella long.
And they lived for a period of time in a matriarchy society.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then they came
that.
Out of it and went into the patriarchy.
Huh.
And it went deep into the patriarchy. If you kind of watch it as we went into the Dark Ages, and things got really, really rough and really, really awful.
Oh.
We're coming out of, I believe, an ebb of the patriarchy
oh,
going back
so.
Into the time of the matriarchy.
Oh,
but I think societies...
Yeah.
But I think societies benefit the best.
Uh-huh.
And Egypt, I think, was at its highest when it was in both a hybrid matriarchy and patriarchy society.
Ooh, like a mix, like together, mixing together, like everybody benefits, you know?
You got the yin and the yang together.
Yeah,
right?
That's why it's so popular. That's why people worship
yeah.
it. It only makes sense that we have the balance and the flow so everybody can benefit from each other. Instead of having one group dominate the other, we're just trying to even it out. It's like a relationship. You know, nobody wants to be the person who's giving the most in a relationship. Like, there's a saying where they say, in a relationship, you're supposed to aim for 75%. You're supposed to give 75% versus giving 50%. Because that way, when you give 75%, then it will feel like 50% to the person. You got to overexert.
That quote has finally made so much more sense. Because
yeah.
last time when you told me that, I was still in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What I was saying was, I thought you were meant give less. Because, like,
no.
I'm going to give 100%. In this relationship,
no.
and Aneke, I thought you were telling me to give 75%.
No,
and then my relationship ended. I'm
no,
sure.
Don't blame it on me. Come on,
I would never. No,
okay,
I know
good.
Why it ended.
Oh, cool.
And I
okay.
Yeah.
No, but what I'm saying definitely, and I think you said it is, instead of giving 50%, you aim for 75%. So you're supposed to be aiming more because then it feels like equal instead of.
So what you're saying is everybody give more, do more.
Do better, basically. You got to do better.
Agreed. I think on every end, I want to see more ladies running as well. And how
yes.
Let me know what I can do to help support.
Oh,
so.
My God. Just listening to this podcast is supporting. We need to, whenever you see a little baby boss lady getting ready, don't discourage her. I always remember when I was in elementary school, the substitute teacher straight up told me, being an architect is going to take a lot of work and a lot of study and a lot of struggle. So maybe you need to think about a different career path. Like, I was a budding baby architect, and granted, that ended up not being my career path, which I'm totally fine with, but that is a discouragement, and I really want people to encourage me and like that one stupid ass substitute teacher.
God. This is your guidance counselor?
Substitute
award
teacher.
Goes to.
Oh, the worst.
Oh, substitute teacher, get out of my face. Well, clearly not.
Right.
And that's sad. But you know what? Also, Aneke, I do want to
yes.
say too,
mm-hmm.
and then,
yeah.
you know, on the upside too, is I think there's someone who's listening right now.
Ooh.
You are listening right now, and
mm-hmm.
you've thought about running, or you've maybe had fantasies or ideas about running for an office.
Mm.
You're listening to this podcast for a reason.
Yes.
It's come into your life for a reason.
Yes. You
need
to run.
You don't know how, but you're going to make it happen. There
yes.
are resources out there to make it happen. The first step is just to take a step and just do a little research. There are resources out there to support you. There's even, like, I know women's groups,
yes.
Minority groups that are out there that are looking to help fund your campaign and to help get you involved.
So many.
It is not too late. If you're under the age of 98,
yeah.
it is not too late for you to pursue this dream. The world needs you. If you're listening to this podcast, you need to go fucking run for something.
Well, I mean, if you want to, you
just
know.
Do it. I don't care. I need you to go do it.
Well, we want people who want to be running for office to run for office. We don't, you know, if that's not
well,
your calling.
If this has piqued your interest while
okay.
I was talking to you at all, I'm talking to you. If
yes.
you're rolling your eyes, scratching your butt, then just keep doing that. But you know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it takes, is that we need to change the leadership, is that, like, it can't keep being these straight white dudes And, like, we can't get mad at the system.
Yeah, from the same family. We can't
get mad at the system if we're not trying to take it, if we're not trying to get seats at the table. And there's opportunities out there. It's just, we got to take that first step. So do it. Go do it.
Yes, please run for office. We need so many different voices. We need so many different activists, like you mentioned before. And we're looking at you. We'll vote for you.
Quizlet Corner. Name that R&B princess tune, dramatic reading edition. Yeah. All right, so here's the game. And I'm going to do a dramatic reading of an R&B princess tune.
Okay.
And you're going to name what that tune is. Now, it starts off at 5 points. You get the 5 points. And then if you need a hint, you'll get 3 points. And if you need another hint, you'll get 1 point.
This is crazy. But all right, let's do it.
And why, you might ask? Because these R&B princesses are black and beautiful and deserve more recognition. And I'm also like, where the fuck did they go? Like, R&B princesses have, they're an endangered species.
It's very true. Where are they? They really don't exist right now.
They don't, yeah. And some of these also twists, they might be a girl group, but they are still, like, put them in that realm. So a little nostalgia for you. I'm going to do a dramatic reading, and here's the first one, okay?
All right, I'm ready.
From the front to back. Well, is you feeling that? Put one hand up. Can you repeat that? Trying to take my man. See, I don't need that, so don't play yourself.
Destiny's Child.
No. But do you know what the name of the song is?
From the back to you feeling that. Put one hand up, pretend to beat that. Are you sure that's not Destiny's Child?
I'm literally looking at the title of what the song is.
Fuck, I thought I would know this shit. Oh, no.
I can go on for it. Here's another line. The next line is, where my girl's at. From the front to back. So do you know the name of the song? Can you name the name of the song?
No. Where My Girl's At?
The name of the song is Where My Girl's At. Yes. Right. Yay. Right. Where My Girl's At by 702. But 3 points for you, Aneke. Three points. All right. Hey,
thank you.
Just getting your name. You're getting back into the group. When's the last time you heard that song? But I isn't that like
that? Since high school.
I also don't understand that song. It's like from the front to back. Like, where are they? Are they in the front and the back?
I have
put one hand up. Why is one hand going up?
Know.
And then can you repeat it? Well, why would I repeat it? I'm trying to take your man.
It makes no sense.
I was listening to the song. I was like, who wrote this? It doesn't make... It
sounds like Candy Burris wrote that. Is it written by Candy Burris from SWV?
Probably.
In Real Housewives fame?
Probably. It's just like random phrases. Like, girl's in the front and the back. You're going to put one hand up. Don't you take my man. Repeat that. You're playing yourself.
That's so stupid. All right. Hit me with another one.
All right. This next one. Here we go. What makes you think that he wants you when I'm the one that brought him to the special places that are in my heart? He was my love right from the start.
Oh. Is it The Boy Is Mine?
Yes, it is The Boy Is Mine.
Brandy and Monica. Yes.
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 Good job,
yes.
Aneke.
Yes, yes.
Redemption. 5 points for you. Eight points. You are doing it.
Oh, my God. Stressful.
Now, this next one, this is worth 10 points because this is not a single.
Okay.
This is not a single. And I'm actually going to, if you can just name which R&B princess you think sang the song.
Okay.
All right. Here's the lyrics. Because this wasn't a single. So this is 10 points.
Okay. This is a deep cut.
I will give you 10 points if you can name the title of the song and the artist. And if you can only get one of those, I'll give you at least 5 points. Yeah.
Okay. Being generous.
Yeah. I'm rooting for you. I am Tyra Banksing for you, Aneke. I am rooting for you. We are all rooting for you. Here's the dramatic reading.
Okay.
I should have been more careful when I let him rock my boat. Oh. I'm stressing all day, every day, hoping it's not the case. I hope I'm just late. It should have came by now. So I'm trying to figure out, late, what the hell you did to me when you took a dig. Late, I'm overdue. What are we gonna do? I know my body, and it's driving me crazy. I'm never late.
Oh, God, pregnancy scare. What the fuck? What the fuck?
Well, can you guess what the name of the title of the song is?
I think
you
might be.
Yes, it is. Okay. 5 points for an
Okay. Okay, let me think about
which R&B princess wrote this song.
Is it Maya?
Yes, it is.
Yeah!
Oh my God. Aneke, I am blown away. I am blown away.
It just sounded like one of her songs. It sounded like she goes there. She, you know, she goes a little edgy.
She, like, literally, I love it. Maya wrote a deep cut about being late on her pregnancy.
On her period.
At one point, she started talking about, she's like, you can meet me at Rite Aid, CVS, you can pick the place. I hope I'm just late.
What?
She's like,
I gotta, she can plan B? Oh my God.
Yeah, she's like, I'm about to hit the convenience store. And then she has this one line where she said, she's like, I'm stressing at home. She's like, why you crying? It ain't yours. I didn't do it alone.
What?
There's a lot happening.
Oh, she is.
I love Maya because she goes for it in her music.
I tell you, she does.
You think it's a fun pop dance track? It is more.
It's serious and it takes you on a journey.
There is more happening there. So good call. Good job on that one. Here we go. All right, we just got one more here. All right. This one was a duet.
Okay.
So
you didn't tell me the duet for Monica Boy is Mine with Brandy.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Do you want extra points for that?
No, I'm okay. I'll be humble about it.
Okay. Here. That sounded very humble. Someone's announcing their humbleness. This one was okay. So it goes, baby, what's the deal? Would I be too forward if I told you how I feel? Oh. That's just the way I do my thing. I'm so for real. Are you feeling my Tims, my baggy jeans, my thug appeal?
Oh.
Do you like it when a man can keep it real?
Oh, fuck.
It's a duet with a group.
Tims, my baggy pants, and my appeal. Oh, my God. I knew this one. I know this song.
It features a person from a certain boy band.
Justin Timberlake.
No. Close.
Same Close. Group.
Yes.
Who cares about any of those other people? Fuck.
Are you Googling it?
No, I went to plug in my computer.
Okay.
Sorry. I also forgot that I'm on mic. I just hella walked away from my mic. Let's see.
You thought you were having
a
phone conversation.
Tim's. Oh, fuck. I don't know. Fuck.
It was Bring It All to Me with Black, the group Black, with JC Chazé.
James.
Was the guest. What? You don't remember Bring It All to Me?
Oh, I do,
baby,
but that,
Bring It All to Me.
That is that's a deep cut.
It was a deep cut. You got late with Maya, so I was like, she can turn this one around. I think it was so, people that JC Chazé sang the line, are you feeling my Tims, my baggy jeans, my thug appeal?
Yes.
That had to
have
been
no
written.
Thug appeal whatsoever.
I know. Like, who, that song had to have been written before he popped up. Like, it had to.
Yeah, because come on, JC Chazé.
No. Can I just read one last Maya line that is crazy? Because I love
Maya's
lyrics.
Please.
She's insane.
I love Maya. That's why I could spot her from a crowd.
See if you can name this Maya jam.
Okay.
Because y'all didn't have no kids, didn't share no mutual friends, and you told me that she turned trick when y'all broke up in 96.
Yes!
Do you remember which song this one was?
Revenge of the Ex or something like
Case
that?
Of
or
we'll Case of the Ex, we'll give it to
you. Case
of the
Ex,
all right, Revenge
okay.
of the Ex. Her lines are like no other. She has another song.
I miss her.
Please
miss
Google
her so much.
The lyrics to Whatever, Bitch.
Yeah.
Please Google the lyrics to Whatever, Bitch.
I know you had me listen to her, but I didn't get a chance to. But I need to revisit some Maya because I had her albums. She was my girl. She was my pop R&B princess. I miss her.
She was mine too. She she did her own thing. Whatever, Bitch was also produced by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis from Janet Jackson's phase. Oh my God. Oh, there's this one line in it. She's like, I see you over there rolling your eyes, snapping your neck. Whatever, bitch. Chicks like you gets the love. Whatever. To my girls in the east. To all my girls in the west. Sing whatever, bitch. Like, that is, that's
so
Maya.
So good.
It's weird because you look at Maya, you don't suspect it, but she's kind of... I don't mean this in a... Like, she's got, like, her lyrics has been kind of ratchet.
She is fine with being ratchet, trust me.
She also has an imaginary accent mark over the Y. Is that a real thing? I think she just added that. She has an accent mark over the Y. You can't have an accent mark over the Y. Anyways.
Like, how do you even... Why?
Yeah, because like, when I was trying to text you, Maya, I was like, listen to this Maya song. My phone wouldn't let me add an accent mark because it's not real.
That is so weird. Like, whatever, bitch. Like, where's the accent?
Oh, I don't, yeah. Whatever. Don't even know. What? Oh, no, it's on her name, Maya. On her name, Maya, the accent mark.
Oh, the Y on the Maya? I thought it was on the, what? My brain is not working right now.
That's okay. That's okay. But you know what, Aneke? You won Quizlet Corner because you got points. You got points. You did
How
really
could
good.
I not get points on this? But you know what? I have to give myself a little bit of credit. I guessed some things that you didn't think I was going to guess.
There were some deep cuts and you pieced it together. So well played, Aneke, for this R&B hip hop princess Quizlet Corner.
Thank you.
Right. Wrap it up, wrap it up, wrap it up again, wrap it up again. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Okay, not one of our best hit singles. That's our hit single called Wrap It Up, Yeah. I mean, Wrap It Up, Yeah. Oh, yeah, with the Kool-Aid Man. Aneke, you and I were talking offline about something, and I think we need to give this man his props.
Let's do it.
Because I was talking about Trevor Noah. He was talking about how... he pretty much told
new host of the Daily Show.
The new host of the Daily Show. Do you think people don't know that?
They might not. They might not.
They were like, Jon Stewart's out, so am I. Well, y'all.
Yeah,
come on.
I mean, it's always good to remind people.
That's true. Well, here's a reminder. Mm-hmm. He's dope, and he pretty much told everyone to fuck off because everybody's been giving Obama such slack because you know he's either been off on vacation or he. He just got like $400,000 to speak at Wall Street. And there's been a history of presidents have always, after like they are done being president, they go speak at Wall Street and they go make a bunch of money. And I also think like, first of all, like Trevor Noah was like, fuck you all. You're not going to start ridiculing the first black president because every president has done this. Why? Like, and also I you know what? And I don't know what he's going to do with that money, but I feel like he's probably going to do some bomb ass shit with that money. He's like, he's a pirate. He is taking that money.
No, you know what? The thing that really pisses me off is like, one, he works for our country. He was literally the president of our country for 8 years.
Literally, he was.
Like, give him a break. Yeah. Like, let him go on vacations with Oprah. Let him charge for some speaking engagements because you know what? He's a civilian now and he can charge for some speaking engagements. And let him be bougie and rich because he's always been kind of bougie and rich these past when he was a governor, you know, all of that junior senator. Yeah. Like, he's been high powered. So he's going to continue to be high powered and he's going to continue to be paid for it. Like, let him be. Nobody was criticizing. Like, people think it's fucking charming that Bush is painting and, like, was giving speaking engagements. Same with Clinton. Nobody is criticizing them. Yeah. Why do we gotta criticize Obama? Like, let him be a former president.
And no one's like, why isn't George Bush stepping in and singing stuff to Trump? Like, everyone's just like, look at him, he painted. That's cute. Look at him, he can't get his raincoat on.
Right! Like, why do... Everything falls on the back of us. And... it's time, like, give Obama a break.
Do you know you know what it is, though? It's, again, gotta work twice as hard to get half as much. Like, we consistently, as POCs, anything we do, it's not held at the same caliber or same level as other folks. And that's why, like, you know, this brings up another point. Someone asked me, they're like, what do you think about affirmative action? I'm like, but it doesn't even matter. We still have to work, like, I can't be as equally qualified as the white guy. I have to be better. So don't give me that. Does that make sense?
Here's what it comes down to. I was listening to, I heard a speech from Martin Luther King Jr. And it really, this one segment that he was talking about really resonated with me. When slavery was abolished, it was during the same time there was a great Western land grab. So while we black people of America who had worked and built the country, built the infrastructure, weren't even given land, we weren't given that 40 acres and a mule, there were white settlers who were just getting land for free in the West, stolen land from the Native Americans. And think about that. So the ancestors of people who are able to just get land, and then, you know, that's their family's land, and they grew up on the land with the house, and you know.
Yeah.
Versus the ancestors of former people who weren't even considered people, and then weren't even given the leg up after they were, oh, thank you, promoted to people. That is why, one, affirmative action is necessary, because we already have been set back 100 years.
Yep.
Multiple hundreds of years.
Yep.
And two, it's called, we constantly have to prove ourselves, because we're coming from a history of people not thinking that we are worthy.
Absolutely.
We're constantly proving it, and it's bullshit. It's bullshit.
Yep.
Well, sorry, I got hella serious.
No, and okay, I hope you edit yourself apologizing, because no apologizing at all. Thank you. Yeah. Let me just say thank you for sharing that. I don't even have anything to add to it, because it was so well put, so well said. Thanks. I would say drop your mic, but it's expensive, so don't.
Yeah, no, I'm keeping it firmly in its place.
Just hold that mic.
Hold the mic.
Well, there was a, you know, we'll talk about it next week, but there's so many other things I want to talk to you about, but we're out of time, so I guess we'll just hold on to next week.
Okay.
Yeah. Go to Max FunCon.
Yes, Max FunCon. Oh, if you want a Jumbotron, go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, and we will say whatever you want us to say on air.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way to be another proud supporter of Minority Corner. Or if there's a special shout-out that you want to give, whatever it is, Jumbotrons, we are doing them now. So go on over. Get your Jumbotron on.
Get your Jumbotron on.
That's our new catchphrase for that. So go ahead and get that on. We want to do some Jumbotrons for y'all. And Aneke's going to be at Max Fun Con West. That's coming up in the beginning of June, I believe. So definitely get your tickets.
June 9th through 11th. I think if they still have tickets, go ahead to MaximumFun.org, buy those tickets. And if you already are going to Maximum Fun Con, sign up for my class. I'm going to be teaching a class.
Aneke's going to be teaching a class. That's dope. I want to take fucking Aneke's class.
Okay.
And you probably get to hang out with Aneke around a campfire, which that also sounds like hella fun.
I'm nice. Come say hi.
You really are like the Sally. I feel like you should be the poster child for the Max Fun Con, because you are hella nice and hella fun.
Thank you, James.
Want to go to that. And I'll be at MaxFunCon East, but that's a long ways away, so we ain't got to talk about that.
But it's coming up, so if you want to buy tickets to MaxFunCon East, buy it and hang out with James.
I'll teach a class and also hang out by a campfire. You know, so that'll happen. I will Oprah Winfrey the shit out of your life while we're there.
Excuse you.
I am slight codependent, and I love to fix people's lives, so that is, I'm a fixer.
I love it. You know what? You just Yanya everybody out there, just fix their lives.
That's what I do. I'm gonna fix your life. I'm gonna get my own reality TV show, and that's my catchphrase. Yes. I'm gonna fix your life.
No, that's already taken, though. That's why I said Yanla, because it's called Fix My Life, Yanla.
Oh, you know what? I think Dear White People has a spoof on that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, that makes sense. All right, super.
Okay. Our Twitter, Maximum Fun, or no, our Twitter is Minority Corner with a K.
There it is.
And then
email minoritycorner@gmail.com with a K as well. And thank you all for listening. I love this community so much, and that you know, I know we have lengthy episodes, but we love that you listen to them.
Yes, you guys love them, and we love you for loving them.
And also at the same time, it's like, you know, I don't feel bad about having lengthy episodes, because how often do you get to hear black gay and black lady voice?
Exactly.
So we are just taking back the time. We are just taking back the time.
Yes, and we are adding on to all the other wonderful podcasters out there that are just like us. There needs to be more of us out there, so
there it is.
Keep on keeping on.
Keep on keeping on, and with that, keep on keeping on, y'all. We love you. Have a great rest of your week.
Yes, and we'll talk to you next week.
We out.
Bye.
Barbara Gray.
I'm Brandy Posey.
And I'm Tess Barker.
We're Lady to Lady. Do you want a sleepover in your ears?
Is that a friend in your pocket, or are you just podcast to see me?
We're a portable hangout you can bring to the gym, on the subway, or on an oil rig.
Seriously, we have listeners who do that.
Chill with us while we get high with Margaret Cho.
Talk showgirls with Katya from Drag Race.
And hear Broadway star Anthony Rapp sing Hamilton.
I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot.
That's Lady to Lady.
Can you keep a secret?
Neither can we.
Hey, Max Fun fans. It's MaximumFun.org founder Jesse Thorne. I just wanted to take a minute to congratulate our colleague, Ben Partridge. He's the host and creator of the Beef and Dairy Network podcast, and they just won the Gold Award for Best Comedy Podcast in the British Podcast Awards. It's a truly remarkable honor. If you haven't checked out Beef and Dairy Network, you are in for a very, very, very special treat. It's a really remarkable and hilarious show. I would say a perfect podcast. Congratulations, Ben Partridge, and congratulations to everyone who's contributed to the Beef and Dairy Network podcast. We're proud of you.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.